You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Raising a child presents many challenges for every parent, but inaccessible resources, equipment and spaces can add extra challenges for blind and partially sighted people. Lack of awareness means visually impaired parents may face stigma and harsher scrutiny than sighted parents, both from healthcare professionals and people they meet in day-to-day life. Just like anyone else, blind and partially sighted people can make excellent parents with accessible resources and the right support. In today's panel, we'll hear about the highs and lows of parenting from blind mums and dads, alongside plenty of tips. Our first panellist is Jenny Molyneux, a family support officer for the RNIB Children, Young People and Families Service, and she was previously in ECLO for 7 years. She's a severely sight-impaired mum to energetic 2-year-old Theodora. Our second panellist is Dave Williams, host of Tech Talk here at RNIB Connect Radio, and he's also an RNIB Inclusive Design Ambassador. He's blind and married a blind woman in his 30s, and their son is now a teenager. And our final panellist is Kelly Barton, who has an 18-year-old son she raised as a single parent. She's been severely sight impaired since birth and is registered blind, and she's Engagement Manager Northwest for Sight Loss Councils and a keen runner. Thanks so much, everyone, for joining us. So let's get started with some fun stories. So Dave, what is your most funny or embarrassing parenting disaster?
Oh my goodness. Well, look, this could happen to anybody. You wouldn't have to be blind for this to happen to you. When my son Arlo was 1 year old, we decided to go and visit some family in Australia, because if you've got a very young child and you're doing a long haul flight, actually you can put them on your knee and you don't have to pay for a full ticket. So it was just us being cheapskates, basically. But obviously Australia is quite a long old trip, and we thought if we packed 12 nappies, that would see us door to door. Short version, Amelia, it didn't. And my son got through all of them and some more. But luckily, the airline were very, very helpful. But I never imagined, you know, growing up, that I would be inside an aeroplane toilet changing a wriggling 1-year-old's nappy at 40,000 feet. So there we are. I did sort of question my life choices. Situation completely of my own making. But we got there, and he's 15 now and seems relatively unscathed.
What was the panic like when you realised you were going to run out of nappies?
Do you know, we were just kind of getting through them, and I don't know whether he'd eaten something that he shouldn't have done, or whether it was the travel or whatever, but it was just the gift that kept on giving, right? And, you know, we sat behind each other on the flight. We kind of took it in shifts, you know, we did like 2 hours each so the other one could get some rest. And yeah, we were running a bit low, and we did mention it to the airline staff. They could tell we were getting a little bit strung out by the thing, and they said, oh, that's fine, we've got some nappies. So it turns out that airlines carry spare nappies. Who knew?
I have been there so many times. When you just, yeah, when you're traveling, you think you've got everything, and then you jump in your bag and you're like, oh, I left the wipes. It's that sheer, oh my goodness, what am I going to do now? I too have taken my little girl on an aeroplane, not as far as Australia, I might add. We only nipped over to Dublin, but even that, for 45 minutes, I was just, you just have to go through everything. Like, what have I got? Have I got everything? Do I need anything else? What happens if this happens? What happens if that happens? And to be fair, she slept from the second we took off to the second we landed, so I didn't need to worry. But I think the one that sort of sprung into my head when you sort of mentioned it was a weaning incident. My daughter has a milk allergy. So one of the things that I have to be careful about is sort of what sort of sweets we're giving her, as in like yogurts or stuff like that. And one of the things I thought I'll try was a particular brand that is non-dairy, and it's a salted caramel sort of moussey type thing. And I thought, great, she's going to love this. This is going to be a real treat for her. And I put on one of those Pelican bibs, the rubber ones, which have that little scoopy bit at the bottom, which are fab for catching bits. At least you think so. So we sort of got to the end of said dessert, and Theodora thoroughly enjoyed it. She enjoyed it that much that she collected it in the bottom of her scoop bib, then grabbed said scoop bib and just threw it over her face and her head. And she was covered from head to toe in sticky, salted caramel goo. That's the only way I can describe it. And at that point, I thought, I think this is the limit to my vision impairment. I'm a bit stuck now. Literally, we were sticking to everything. And I just thought, I don't actually know how to deal with this situation. And the only thing I could do was literally bundle her up in a towel, carry her up to the bath and just hose her down with the shower fully clothed, because I genuinely just had no idea how to deal with the situation other than that. Needless to say, she's never had one of those puddings ever since.
Have you, are there any kind of sticky surfaces that you still find sometimes?
Having a toddler, everywhere is sticky. They just seem to stick to everything. They just touch everything. And yeah, there's always a sticky surface around the dinner table in our house, definitely.
What about you, Kelly?
I think for me, when my son was little, I used to like try and keep everything in the same place all the time so that I could find everything that I needed. And I hadn't realised that one time he'd managed to get hold of, had like a basket with all his like nappies, you know, all those things in when they're little. I mean, he's 18 now. And I hadn't realised that my mum came round and she was like, do you actually realise? And he'd managed to get hold of a tub of Sudocrem and his face was literally covered in it. And I was just like mortified. I was like, oh no, how did I not even realise? I didn't hear it, smell it or anything. I was like, how did that even happen? But yeah, so that wasn't great.
It's a really weird thing because before you become a parent, the concept of changing a nappy just seems completely disgusting, right? But actually, when it's your own child, somehow you're not revolted by it in the way that you sort of think that you might be. So actually, changing a nappy wasn't a problem. Once I sort of understood all the things that you could do, distract them, give them a toy, actually, nappy changing was fine. But I don't know why with weaning, you know, just the whole Weetabix up the walls and drinks going everywhere. And, you know, I can totally relate, everything being sticky. I found that tough to deal with. And in the end, I think I just gave my son food that he could just, you know, put in his own mouth. And if he squashed it and put on the floor, well, the dog would probably have it anyway.
Yeah, I actually contacted my health visitor and I said, I really don't know how I'm going to do this. It was really quite stressful for me. But she came up with some really good tips, bless her, for helping me to help her do it. So I found that standing actually sort of almost behind her, so instead of sort of sitting in front of her and pushing the spoon away from me and trying to find her mouth, it was more of a natural coming towards me, because that's how I would use a spoon. And I had to just get my head around the fact it was going to be messy. I used to put a plastic tablecloth underneath the high chair just to try and catch all the bits that I could then roll up and shake in the bin, just to try and help the mess. But you've just got to get your head around it. And like you, Dave, I kind of got to the point where I just put stuff on her tray and let her crack on once she was sort of able to chew things and not choke as often. Because that was the other thing that I was really anxious about, is what happens if she chokes? Am I going to be able to see whether she's choking? And actually, your instinct as a parent, whether you can see or not, all parents are frightened of that sort of thing. So, yeah.
When I was trying to teach my son to tie his shoelaces, for some reason, I found that tying somebody else's shoelaces is so much more difficult than doing your own, right? And so I would sit with him like on the floor and he'd be kind of, you know, sat between my feet with my feet sort of either side, and I'd do my own and then I would do his, and he could kind of see, you know, what was happening because he's sighted. People always ask that, for that's the first question, isn't it, quite often, you know, oh, can your child see? Oh, it must be a great help and all that. But you know, never mind what are they into or what's their name or, you know, all those things. People are obsessed with that.
Are there any other really helpful adaptations that you figured out?
Parenting is a very tactile experience anyway, I think, regardless of your level of eyesight. And if you've had sight loss for a long time, then of course you're used to doing things by touch. So I was quite comfortable with doing nappies, as I mentioned. Bottles were fine as well. Making up the bottles, we used the talking scales, so that was quite helpful. And I remember somebody coming round from the social services when we got home from the hospital, and I was showing her this. She's like, oh, that's clever, I didn't know about that, you know. And that was a surprise to me, because I sort of expected that the professionals would have all the hacks and the tips, and actually you find that you learn more from speaking with other blind parents. That was so important. Also, when he started crawling around, we attached bells to him, to his leg, or put like a little backpack on or whatever that had little bells on, just so that we could always hear. Of course, eventually they work out how to take, you know, those things off, but it does work for a little while. And then when, you know, you're outside and they want to move a little bit further away, it's a bit about building that trust, you know, and about recall and staying in voice contact, you know, just saying, "You're right," you know, like, you don't have to come back, just checking in, how's it going? You know, kids fall over, all kids fall over, and that's perfectly normal, right? You do what you can to mitigate all the risks. There is just a natural chaos about raising small children, I think, for anyone.
I think Dave's right, you know, speaking to other VI parents is actually where I've got a lot of my information from. For when Theodora's not feeling well, I use a talking thermometer, so I'm not relying on somebody else who's sighted to do that, or I use some apps on my phone to help me read. I think being a VI parent now, where we've got technology's really come on, that's been really helpful. So you're not relying on another person, a sighted person, to sort of read things for you. And that's quite empowering as a parent, to be able to sort of, you know, do that and not constantly ask somebody, or what does that say? What's the dosage on that? And you have to find ways of being able to do it and do it safely. You can't just say, "Oh, right, sorry, sweetie, you know, your teeth and your gums are really sore, but I can't give you Calpol because I've got nobody to help." You've got to find ways of doing it yourself. But yeah, absolutely, speaking to other VI parents, I found was invaluable for me, really, just to get information and tips and hacks.
And Kelly, how about you?
Like, I'm not just saying this, but Ollie, my son has always been really good at understanding that I couldn't see stuff. So I just used to, like, talk to him about everything. And, like, I was really lucky. He would never, like, run off from me. He would always stay close by, you know. And when he was a teenager, obviously, he understood a lot more then. So it was even easier, really. So there was nothing, I didn't ever, like, attached anything to him so I could hear him or anything like that. I just used to keep him close by. And then if we were out with friends, my friends would kind of help me look out for him as well. I brought my son up on my own as well, as a single parent, so I guess it did have some challenges, but I've been lucky to have a lot of friends and family, particularly my family, nearby.
What do you think is more stressful as a blind parent than it would maybe be for sighted parents?
I think one of the things that you kind of need to be a bit proactive about is when your child is going to school, like, go in and talk to the school about making sure that you've got access to the information you need. So particularly when they're very young, you know, how are you going to find out what their homework is, for example? You know, how are you going to read their school report? You know, you need access to that information as a parent, and the only way to get it is to really be proactive and make sure that you get involved. Otherwise, it's just not going to happen, right? Because the school, they've got however many hundred other children that they need to think about, and they don't necessarily realize what your needs are or what your preferred accessible format is. Yeah, just kind of get to know, like, the school office or who's, like, the head of year, to make sure that you've got access to all the information that you need to support their learning. I was really worried about, would I be able to teach my son to read? And it turns out I didn't need to worry about that, because obviously that's what teachers do, right? But what I could do as a parent was getting enthusiastic about reading, and got books and stories about subjects that he was interested in, whether it was, you know, football or dinosaurs or space. The Clear Vision Library is a wonderful resource for that. If you're on Facebook, there's a VI Parents and Carers Together group, I think, as well. Of course, RNIB have got the Children, Young Peoples and Families team. So there's lots of places to go. Just get on Google for an afternoon, you know, and find out where those other blind parents are. And
what about you, Kelly?
Part of it was, in the early stages, it was other people's attitudes. So I remember my son being really young, I took him, like, swimming, to a swimming lesson, and someone said to me, another parent said to me, "Oh, it must be really difficult for your son being a carer." I was astounded by that, because I thought, like, there's absolutely, you know, I do everything for him, and I always have done, probably to my detriment now, because he can't do anything for himself, like make food and stuff, because I've always been like, no, I'm going to do it, because I don't want anyone to ever think that he has to do for me. So that, so for me, it was always other people's attitudes, and I found it quite shocking because I didn't expect it. I don't know if anyone else has ever experienced that.
I have, in a slightly different way, but mine was actually whilst I was pregnant. So my husband and I had to have two rounds of IVF to have Theodora. It's not a decision that we'd gone into lightly. I've also got three stepsons, but when I was pregnant, it was in COVID, sort of the latter end of COVID. So all the antenatal sort of face-to-face sessions, they'd all stopped. All I kept getting told was, if you follow this link on YouTube, you can watch a YouTube video. I said, I can't watch a YouTube video. I can't see it. I can hear what's going on, but it's not very descriptive. And that was the one thing, really, that I was quite anxious about, because although I'd been around toddlers and small children, I'd never actually birthed a baby myself. I actually asked for some help. I said to my midwife when I was probably about 22, 24 weeks pregnant, I said, I'm a bit worried that I've never bathed a baby before. I've never sort of fed a baby a bottle, but I might want to breastfeed. You know, can somebody show me, is this something? And unfortunately, that kind of got misconstrued into a safeguarding referral, and they turned up and there was no safeguarding concerns at all. They'd never supported a visually impaired mum before, and I think that was their default, was, oh, well, if she can't do it, then it's safeguarding. Well, it's not safeguarding, it's education. And again, it was professionals not understanding and questioning me as a visually impaired parent, how I was going to do stuff. And I think that sort of set my mindset, very much like you, Kelly. I can prove that I can do this myself. You know, I'm going to prove to everybody that I don't need any help. And actually, that was detrimental to me. You know, I think it's really important, us and doing sort of something like this is actually breaking down those barriers and demonstrating that actually us VI parents are awesome. You know, we're doing it with a vision impairment, and we're absolutely, or you know, being ace at it as well.
I'm sure they kept my wife and son in hospital for longer because we were both blind, and I think they wanted to be sure that we knew what we were doing. And I guess there has to be an element of that, right? You know, we've got to protect kids, but at the same time, I do feel they over-egged it. When we did get home, we had a visit from Children's Services. My wife was really nervous about that visit. She was terrified because, of course, you know, her biggest fear was, are they going to take the child away from us? And so I was quite assertive, you know, and I said, well, what we're going to do, we're going to set the agenda. When this person arrives from the social services, we are going to take them round and we are going to show them how we do all these things and how we're actually smashing it. And then what we're going to do is we're going to give them a list of things that we want help with that they can then take away. Just felt like if we didn't approach that visit with the sort of positive kind of attitude of this is how it's going to go. And by the way, blind people do raise kids and they do it really well. And in terms of challenges, as well as other people's kind of attitudes, one of the things that I always felt like I was letting my son down with was getting him to stuff. You know, all the activities that they have, like after school and at weekends. My son's an only child, so I was very keen that he sign up for everything and that he did everything, you know. And he's a bit older now, so he can go on his bike or walk or get the bus or whatever. But obviously when he's younger, you know, he's reliant on the taxi of mum and dad. Well, of course, neither of us drive, right? So we would spend, you know, a small fortune on taxis, you know, trying to get him to stuff. But that wasn't always practical or affordable, you know. And I did find that there were certain things where people were more forthcoming than others in terms of helping out with lifts. You know, weirdly, like I found like all the athletics people were always really helpful, but the football people were kind of less helpful. So some of what he ended up doing was kind of dictated by, you know, who was going to be more supportive. And then the final thing in terms of challenges that I think that's really hard for us as blind parents is being able to really spontaneously celebrate their successes. You know, when your child scores a goal or wins a race or does something in a play, you know, obviously see. If you're sighted, you can see that happening in the moment. And obviously, we experience that through the filter of somebody else's description or what we get told afterwards. But that's the only time in my whole life when I've ever felt like, do you know what, I would like to be able to see. Like, I'm quite comfortable as a blind person. I feel really confident. I'm not even sure I would accept it if my eyesight were offered to me, you know, instead of, like, I don't know, if it was a choice between eyesight and the Euro Millions, you know, I'm sufficiently shallow that I'd probably want to pay off the mortgage and fund my son going to university or something, you know, rather than being able to see. But actually, in terms of my son, I think I that's my only kind of regret, I guess, is that, you know, I didn't get to see him do the successful things that he has done. And that is tough.
Yeah, I remember when my son started playing football, and he still does it now. And, like, you know, the excitement from him when he scored a goal, and everyone else would be cheering, and I'd be there just, like, not really knowing quite what's happening. And I always used to think, oh, I wish I could see his little face, like, see what he looks like when he scores. Totally agree with Dave on that. That's the first time I ever thought, do you know what, I actually wish I could see. Like, I don't care in any other part of my life at all, but that, as a parent, you just do want to see that. And I think when, you know, when there's, like, school plays as well, and you hear all the parents moaning, going, oh, I'm too near the back and I can't really see. And I always just think, oh, you're so lucky, like, you can actually see your kid in this play. And I'm just having to get someone to kind of describe it secondhand to me, and it's just not the same. Yeah, those things definitely come out more as, you know, as they get older. Yeah, it's a challenge, but, you know, you just have to, there's nothing you can do about it, I guess, is there?
I would hate for somebody to sort of tune in and only hear this bit of the conversation, right?
Because yeah, I agree.
The parenting is such a joy. You know, there's been so many precious moments. And I actually think having blind parents in some ways has been to his benefit. He certainly learned to communicate much younger because he realised that pointing at stuff wasn't going to elicit a response. It certainly made him more empathetic. You know, if you see somebody else having a problem, he doesn't even think about it. He just goes over, like, are you all right? Can I help you? You know, and that makes me so proud that he's the kind of person that, you know, I always sort of hoped that he would become. He's also got to do a little bit of, you know, cue jumping in situations. You know, somebody said, oh, we see your parents, but, oh, come on, just come this way or whatever. And, you know, I try not to take advantage of that. But then sometimes when you've got a young child and you're at a theme park, do you know what? You're going to take it, aren't you? Of course you are. So he's had some incredible experiences, I think, as a result of having blind parents.
Similar to, you know, to what Dave said, Ollie's really, like, understanding. And yeah, we're quite happy to queue jump. We've definitely done that a few times in theme parks. You know, I think sometimes we have a laugh with it as well. So, like, you know, it'll be on his screen and he'll be like, oh no, I've come off it now. Don't worry, I'm not on my phone or my iPad anymore. And I can hear that he still is, because his head's sort of down, you know, I can hear, like, the direction of his voice. And I'm like, I know you know, you're winding me up and I know you're still on there. And we just have a laugh about it. Like, we don't, you know, nothing's too serious. I think it's good for them to grow up knowing that, you know, you've got to have the humour as well, and it's not all doom and gloom at all. And, you know, and he's done some guide running with me before, which was brilliant. And, you know, we both enjoyed that kind of running together. And there's loads of stuff that we, you know, we do together and really enjoy. And it's just kind of really natural.
And I think you've got to pick your battles, haven't you?
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes when there are, you know, what you might consider sort of minor rule breaking and stuff like that, or when you know they're doing something visually that actually, you know, that, you know, like they're on their screen and they've told you they're not or whatever, you know, and I always say, like, oh, you must think I was born yesterday or whatever, you know, and just sort of try and play it down. I know my wife gets really annoyed because she says, oh, he's taking the mickey, he's taking advantage. And it's like, well, do you know what? There are bigger fish to fry, you know? There are much more serious issues to think about, you know, in terms of just their general well-being, how they're getting on at school, you know, who their group of friends are. You know, and I think it's true for all parents that when your children are really small, you're actually dealing with lots of little problems, right? Like, you know, the next nappy or the next meal, or is it time for them to have a sleep, and things like that. But when they get older and they get a little bit more independent, then you're worrying about bigger problems, like, have they got the right diet, or are they hanging around with the wrong group of people, or, you know, the controls for moderating screen time are accessible, right? So you can set that up so that you can restrict how much screen time, or you can look at the history so you know that they've been looking at appropriate content. But none of that, I think, replaces just trust and building that relationship with your child and having conversations about, you know, what is appropriate and what the risks are and what you should do if you see something that you think is inappropriate and that kind of thing. Because at the end of the day, you want to prepare them to be independent and be able to manage that for themselves, right? You're not always going to be able to restrict their screen time. You can't control what time somebody else goes to sleep, for example, you know. So you have to have, like, you know, as much as possible conversations once they're old enough, you know, to make sure that there's a kind of a mutual understanding and a mutual trust that, okay, well, if you stay up late on your iPad, you're going to feel very tired tomorrow and you're going to be grumpy, you know. And they're going to have to do that, and sometimes they have to cross boundaries to know where they are, right?
When you're having a bad parenting day, what advice do you tell yourself and you tell other people to kind of help them feel a bit better and reassure them?
Don't be too hard on yourself. It can be quite challenging. You will probably come up with barriers that you never even thought were going to be an issue, and this all of a sudden they are. But just remember that it's one day in a lot of days, and I think as VI parents, we are our worst critics. We're the ones who think that we've got something to prove, that we can do it better than anybody else. And we absolutely can. We are awesome parents, but it's also giving yourself a break and actually saying, do you know what? It's okay. We don't have to ace it every day. And tomorrow is another day. One of the things I really wish I had access to, but they didn't actually exist when I was pregnant and had my little girl, was the Children, Young People, Family and Education Service have written two amazing VI parenting guides. So both of these guides are there to support VI parents with some information just to help you feel like you know what's coming. So the first guide is mainly aimed at sort of pregnancy, what to expect through pregnancy, then through having your baby, and then parenting up to the age of one. So it looks at things like advocating for yourself when baby arrives, things like changing nappies and how prepared you need to be. Being organised is really a really good top tip. And then the second guide sort of moves through sort of the toddler stage into the early years. So looking at things like potty training, which is absolutely something I am referring to a lot at the moment, because my little girl has just started potty training, and I'm so thankful for the guide and the information because it does make life a little bit easier. And then it goes up through sort of parenting when they're at school, supporting them with their education, you know, going to the park, all those things. The guide's there to support VI parents to be prepared. And for any parent who wants some more information, if they go to the RNIB website, so that's www.rnib.org.uk, and if they search parenting guide, both of those will pop up. And if any parent needs any further support from the Children, Young People and Family Service, they can contact us on cypf@rnib.org.uk, or you can ring the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999.
How about you, Dave?
I think the most important thing is to keep it in context and remind yourself that it's not always like this, right? There are going to be tough times, and there are going to be times when other people's attitudes are the problem, or you're struggling to get access to some information, right? And certainly reaching out to other blind parents can get you some of those answers, but also reminding yourself that not every day is terrible, you know. And I talk a lot about Braille because for me, I had so much joy as a parent, as a dad, reading the bedtime story with my son. And that was something that I just didn't expect that I would be so into as I was. I actively looked forward to reading the bedtime story and doing all the silly voices and all of that. Like, I just loved it. And You know, my son loved it for a while, and then he got older. He was like, "Dad, just stop now." You know, because of course, eventually, you just become cringy as a parent, and you know, they don't want you reading to them anymore. You know, so I love that, and I think just reminding yourself that you know, tomorrow's another day, and that you're going to make more memories, and that you're not going to get this time again. You know, that's the thing. You know, Kelly's son is a bit older than mine, and I think, oh my gosh, my boy in a few years he's going to be 18, and you have to find them role models. You know, when they stop listening to you as a parent, you've got to try and put people in, you know, in their kind of eye line who they respect and look to. And you know, I just think you reap what you sow, and spend as much time with them, you know, because that's the thing. You can, as a parent, you know, and it's true for anyone with UVI or not, just pour as much love down that well as you possibly can, because, you know, you won't get this time again.
I just tend to focus on the positives of the day, you know, and I always think with kids, you know, stuff happens, and it happens whether you can see or you can't see as a parent. So pretty much most of my friends are all sighted, and I can guarantee if I talk to them about something that's happened, it, you know, it would have happened with their children as well. So I think sometimes you can sort of almost say to yourself, oh, it's because I can't see. And it's never anything to do with that, really. It's normally just life, you know, as parents and kids. And my son is 18 now, and I think, oh, where have those years gone? He's suddenly driving a car and going to be going off to uni. And yeah, it just goes so fast. I absolutely love being a mum, and I still do now. And as they get older, it just, I don't know, it just changes. But, you know, it's all good. Each stage is brilliant. And I just think you just got to cherish all the moments that you do have with them, because, you know, they're just amazing kids. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Jenny Molyneux, Dave Williams and Kelly Barton, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio for our Parenting Roundtable.